You're listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show, produced by The Banyan Collective. Find more mind-blowing podcasts at thebanyancollective.com and on iTunes. The Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. Adventure for your ears.
You haven't lived until you've heard the show Americans are talking about. The show that launches its listeners to the height of humanity. The audio hour that travels the landscape of adventure. The sound that comforts more than the clip of your first bolt. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show!
We're Outdoor Adventure Summits, the airwaves. It is the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. I'm your host, R. Brandon Long, on belay with you for the next hour. Across the table from me here is the best co-host in all the land, Todd to the Top. This week's show is powered by Goal Zero.
You're like, Todd, you can talk when I say you can talk. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Goal Zero.
Goal Zero, we are podcasting live down by the river on the patio at Slackwater Pub and Pizzeria, enjoying a lovely beer in downtown Ogden, Utah. What are we drinking here today, Todd?
Red Rocks Junior IPA, their draft choice, which is a very good meal beer. I do know that the draft choices get a bad rap, as they should sometimes, but that being said, this is a good sort of, you know, meal beer. We'll be able to get through a pitcher or two, where if we were just drinking like a, you know, full strength, it might be just one or two,
yeah,
you know,
and yeah,
in your case, just four, and that's it. Yeah.
And they call those sessions, right? Session,
yes,
beer?
Sessions. Yeah, exactly. Sessions. All right, so this week we do have a weekly happy, which includes a base jump. That always makes you happy.
Let's hope it ends happy. I'm guessing that's the case, yeah.
An interview with Derek DeBruin, who joins us again from Bearhouse Mountain Guiding. We'll chat about the loss of Uli Steck, Killian Jornet's record on Mount Everest. Oh, and by the way, Honnold went all Honnold on us, and so we'll chat about that. Give you some on the docket and some in the news, including the death of a surf icon, as well as a beheaded cougar found somewhere here on the Bonneville shoreline. Another local product company, Cool, has worked to save an alpine forest. We'll give you some information about that. And where can you drink and not drink at Pine View and Causey now that they passed the ban? And then six beers that pay homage to the national parks. Worth watching, a worth reading, and a quote of the week, Outdoor Jukebox, and more on the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show, episode 275. Honnold is a god, so let's charge.
He summits with the agility of a mountain goat, flashes routes faster than UPS, is more intimate in the mountains than Jake Gyllenhaal. He's Todd to the Top.
Right, so this is Andy Lewis, Sketchy Lewis, the famous slackliner. This is our weekly happy. He just set a record for the lowest base jump opening. And oh, by the way, he does it between two arches.
Let's see if I'm Andy Lewis, and that's me. And this is a story about an exit point. An exit point that I've been training for and thinking about for years. It's a cliff next to an arch that you can jump through and hopefully deploy your canopy late enough not to hit the arch, but early enough to have a safe landing. The thing about Morning Glory Arch is that it's only accessible down a canyoneering route. You must rappel down into Negroville Canyon, navigate through it, and eventually you will get to the arch. There is no cell phone service here. There is no reception. There is no easy rescue. So when you're considering the lowest base jump in the world, this is probably not the best location.
All right, so that's your weekly happy. All right, joining us here again on the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show, Derek DeBruin of Bearhouse Mountain Guiding. Derek, thank you so much for hanging out with us again.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you reached out to us. It has been a busy month, week in news for mountaineering and climbing in general. Let's start with the loss of Uli Steck. Your thoughts?
I guess we should open with it's just tragic.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, just because someone's, anytime someone dies, right, there's room for the opportunity to feel that there's a loss that's happened and there's some tragedy associated with it. On the other hand, I also think there's, you know, the backlash against it was perhaps a bit unwarranted or maybe just uninformed, you know? Uli was doing what he was good at, and part of, you know, soloing Himalayan peaks is accepting the risk that you might fall off and die. It's not like he didn't know what he was doing.
This is a man that wrote the book on it. Or I don't know if he wrote a book specifically. But yeah.
No, I don't think Uli actually has written a book specifically. But no, like, I mean,
this is a guy that read a book on it.
Actually, you know what? I would be... Maybe he read some books. I'm not sure. I'm gonna sort of steer away from speculation on this one. But no, I think like Uli is exceptionally skilled, and so he's operating at a really high level. And you know, if you want to climb things quickly, right, the fastest way to do that is without a rope, and that's what he was doing. And in this case, he was actually just on an acclimatization climb, and I think he slipped and fell. And I guess I'm saying like that can happen any time, and that's part of the risk you accept. But in some sense, you know, it's not really. I mean, with given Uli's level of mastery, it's not so different from walking on the sidewalk, if you'll allow the analogy, right? Like, so Todd, how long have you been walking? A couple decades?
I'd say since about the beginning.
Okay,
the beginning.
You've been walking like a long time then, like
long
many,
time.
Many years.
Okay. Many years.
Now, I like him a couple of decades. Yeah,
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah. So if you were to like walk down the sidewalk here, are you concerned really that you're just going to randomly fall into the river?
No, I'm not. Okay. I'm not. That didn't really pass in my head.
And
yeah.
how do you feel walking upstairs?
I feel very confident.
You got that?
That
I mean, that's like a
top.
45 degree slope. You can just walk up those things without falling over.
Yeah, but I'm really good at stairs.
Oh, and how about a ladder? Could you climb a ladder?
I'm actually very proficient with ladders.
Okay.
I have a lot of experience, years of experience with ladders. So
there you go.
So I can
even
take
scaffolding.
Scaffolding too.
Yeah, just okay. A lot of experience.
Right, right. And so then, like, could you translate those skills to, like, a trail? Maybe, like, hike a rugged trail or, like, go scrambling with your hands and feet a little bit?
Yeah.
Maybe, like, crush Angel's Landing down in Zion?
Yeah, like, almost like a seamless transition.
Now, I would
feel pretty comfortable about that.
Is there a point where you might, like, start to feel uncomfortable? Like, oh, this is a little too exposed, this is a little too challenging?
Yeah.
Yeah, where's that line for you?
Night.
Nighttime?
Nighttime.
Yeah.
Barefoot,
scrambling around on like unroped, like with big drops below.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, there's that little bit of extra fear that would be attached. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess my point is like everyone has their line somewhere.
Right.
Right. And if you become sufficiently skilled at moving through the mountains or climbing a big rock face, all you're doing is pushing your line further out. Right. You know, for example, like when I work as a mountain guide, oftentimes we do this thing called short roping, where I'm just tied together with the clients on a really short rope. And the protection is my body and my hand, right? If you slip, I'm going to stop you from falling, right? I'm not going to, like, catch or fall with my biceps or something. I'm not, like, super strong or anything. That's ridiculous. But the idea that, like, oh, as we're walking across this exposed spot, if you're just to take a little slip, I'm going to make sure that slip doesn't turn into a tumble and you go careening off the edge, right?
Right.
Well, that process necessitates me moving through this sort of mountainous terrain that makes other people uncomfortable at a level that allows me to not fall and, in addition, provide security to the people who are tied to me. Right, so I necessarily have to develop a skill where my line is further out there. And so in the case of Uli Steck, his line was basically as far out as you can take it. And honestly, I think the proof is in the pudding. Like, he's done so many record-setting ascents in so many ways, whether they're first ascents or big peaks or speed records or whatever, that, you know, like, I think he had pretty good reason to think that he would probably be okay doing this too.
No, that's exactly how I see it, yeah.
Kilian Jornet also set a record on Mount Everest, speed record. He summited it twice, actually. But
he did.
Put into perspective his record, and then whose record is more impressive, Kilian Jornet up Everest or Honnold up El Cap?
Oh, geez. I don't know. In some ways, they're not comparable.
That's why I asked.
Yeah, I know. That's real nice of you. Well, actually, while we're at it, I would like to, can I mention another record that happened this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the first linking of Everest and Lhotse was done this year by a Nepali climber, actually. So to bag two peaks, and actually he did, I want to say he did 3 8,000-meter peaks in 5 days. It was insane.
Wow.
One of the theories about what Uli was doing was that he was climbing up Nhotse, but also maybe scouting, because the sort of the line to do there would be the horseshoe. up Everest, then across Lhotse, and then over Nüpse as well, back all three peaks in one go. And no one had ever even done two peaks in one go, and that just got done this season as well.
One go meaning not like one night, but it's like one trip.
You're right. Leave base camp, summit Everest, summit Lhotse, come back down. That got done this year. And then the sort of the logical...
Where in the news is that? I haven't seen it. It's on your Everest news pages, I guess, but like it hasn't hit anything yet.
Well, it's a little more obscure. It's less relatable, you know?
Sure.
Like when Honnold's on El Cap and he's climbing thousands of feet in the air without a rope, you can see there's thousands of feet below him and he's ropeless and, oh my God, that looks vertical and scary. And that's instantly relatable, right?
Well, and Cedar said to fellow rock climbers, no use in doing anything noteworthy in the next couple of weeks because it won't get any press.
Right, sure, absolutely.
which is pretty true,
And so with Journée on Everest, right, like Everest is a pretty relatable thing. Like even if people don't fully understand what's happening, like they've heard of Everest, they know what's happening. Like, oh, it was the fastest ascent of Everest. That's insane.
Yeah.
But to say like, oh, well, we just took it to the next step and we bagged two peaks in one ascent, one push.
Lead with Everest. Everest link up.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah. So anyway. I think they're just in sort of fully different domains. Like Everest in some ways is just going to be technically easier climbing, right? Killian's mostly like running up the thing, which to me, that's the more impressive part, is like sustaining that sort of output for that long at such a high altitude is kind of nuts. But, I guess maybe it'd be interesting to see like how long Killian's record stands, if that makes sense. So like, is this gonna be super significant in that it's like that's gonna be the benchmark for a long time, or is this gonna get broken next season?
Okay, so whose record falls first?
Who? What? Honnold or Journée?
Yeah,
definitely Journée's.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you think about like, so the nose was first climbed back in the 50s, right? Like El Cap had its first ascent, and it wasn't even free climbed until the 90s. And now it's been free soloed in 2017. Like, it's taken a hot minute to get to this point, right?
Right.
But, you know, we've gotten progressively quicker and quicker on Everest. And the whole, like, sort of speed climbing on this not quite as severely technical terrain is, I think in some ways, it's a more accessible thing to do, right? Because there is a little bit more room for error. You just have to sort of have the willingness to be, like, really fit and sort of suck it up and breathe hard. I don't mean to diminish what Journée has done by any means. I want to be really clear about that. But, I mean, to me, the next logical step after Freerider is to, like, free solo the nose on El Cap. And I don't think that's going to happen for a generation.
So we are talking about two, you know, completely different achievements.
They both got to the top of a thing, but that's kind of where the similarity ends, I feel like.
Both involve, like, rocks and earth.
There's some snow and ice on one of them, too.
Killian's, is it fair to say, is like 90% physical. His endurance and his training physically is unbelievable. There's some mental capacity there, but where Honnold's, is it fair to say, is not the strongest climber in the world, but mentally he is far and above anyone else, maybe any other athlete in the world.
There's a lot of athletes in the world, but yeah, I think he's definitely, like, his mental game is certainly super strong. But you can't really diminish, like, the mental aspect that goes into running long distances for a long time, right?
For sure.
You know, I think,
I'm just comparing the two athletes themselves. What, you know?
I mean, okay, well, I guess if you had him start at the base of Big Mountain and run a race, like, Killian would definitely win. And if you're like, hey, would you please on-site free solo this 512? Well, Honnold would live.
Yeah. Honnold would live. Yeah.
Right? So I think maybe in that sense, like, maybe the difference is really like the explicitness of the risk involved, right? There's a lot more wiggle room, I guess, in the sense of like running up Everest. Like, now if anything goes wrong, it's not like he's got enough equipment to like survive a night out or something, right? He's probably going to be totally hosed unless he gets rescued.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if Honnold, if anything goes wrong, well, he's going to be dead in under 13 seconds. You know, like. And I think it's only a 3 or 4 from the base, from the top of El Cap. It's not a very quick fall, or very long fall, rather.
Yeah. Yeah, that's insane.
I don't even want to picture that in my head. I just don't want to see.
Well, and maybe that's the sort of thing that makes Honnold different, is like the ability to come to terms with that and then do it anyway.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
No, it's an unbelievable feat, and I feel like the amount of searchable material online to better yourself physically is endless. but the mental side is not close, you know, on that. And so what Honnold does in his preparation is certainly unique in the way he goes about training the brain, and how he can just tell himself, it doesn't help me up there. I think that was his quote, like, worrying about it doesn't help me. So
yeah, I
mean, he puts it aside, like, well, how the hell do you do that for 4 hours? Like, if you're on a high ball boulder problem,
sure,
and you're or the last bolt or chains are very high, you know, you're stretched out on a rope, what you can maybe control your brain for a couple of minutes or something, you know, but sketchy, and you're like, okay, but I'm almost there. But imagine doing that for 4 hours.
Yeah, but, well, that's the thing is you can't think I'm almost there. Right, like that's the kind of thing that makes you rush. Like that actually increases the tension or the anxiety or the thing that's going to make you fall. It's like, so when Lynn Hill talked about free climbing the nose for the first time, one of the things she mentioned was being patient, right? Like just engaging with the fact that it's really challenging and uncomfortable to grab these tiny, tiny holds and then balance perfectly on them and then move to the next one and just do that on repeat until you can place another good piece of gear, right? And it's a similar process than when you're free soloing or in some sense for Jernay as well, right? Like he still has to put out of his mind, like, yeah, I'm not going to die up here. I'm just going to go do the thing. When I go through the same process anytime I go soloing, it's like you just commit in advance, and then honestly the harder part is knowing when it makes sense to back off. Mm-hmm. But I think once you get in the headspace, the trick is just staying in that headspace. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you're gonna go do big routes of any kind, like, you know, if you're especially in the Alpine, there's lots of soloing involved. We just don't really talk about it very much. Because it's not necessarily as notable, you know, it happens more regularly and it's not as necessarily technically demanding. But I mean, you kind of, I guess it's part of it's knowing what you can do and then just committing to the fact that, yeah, okay, I can do this.
How many times has he done this climb?
Free rider?
In his life.
Oh, I think like a dozen or something.
You think, see, in my head, I would think even more. Like, I mean,
possibly,
down to that sort of muscle memory going up. And I always think that with a lot of these climbs he does, how many times he does it before time.
Definitely some preparation. And that might be the big difference between, like, say, what Honnold did and Jernay did, right? Because it's not like Killian has gone dozens of times up Everest, you know?
Yeah. No, that's a good point, yeah.
And so that maybe describes the difference in the challenge there, too, you know? But, yeah, preparation is certainly important. And, well, I mean, and a lot of those routes on El Cap, like, a lot of them start from similar places or enter similar places or cross, you know, pitches a few times. And so, I mean, at some point, like, you've done the free blast a bunch, you know, like that first sort of third of the mountain up to the big ledge, you know? So yeah, like getting comfortable on the terrain is really going to be a big part of it too. But at some point you just have to be like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to fall. Like, it's like walking down the sidewalk, right? You don't even think about falling when you walk down the sidewalk.
Yeah. But then you look down and it's like 3,000 feet or something. So it's ridiculous.
Possibly, but have you ever looked down and like felt exhilarated?
No, not that high up. It scares the hell
really?
Out of me. Yeah. No, like, but if I'm on rope, if I'm on belay, I'm fine.
Sure. Well, I guess I'm like, being on top of a mountain, looking out at the thousands of feet below you into the valley or something, right? Like that's
amazing.
Yeah.
If I've got a good foot stance underneath me.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, then it's not really that different than being like, cool, I'm hanging on these holds and this is amazing, right? It's super liberating.
Again, we're chatting with Derek DeBruin of Bear House Mountain Guiding, and we are on the patio at Slackwater down by the river right here in Ogden, Utah. It's a little windy, nice and warm, but a little windy, so you catch some of that. Derek, anyone contact you about, by the way, do you teach free solo classes at Bear House now?
Yeah, we don't teach free soloing. We've not gotten any inquiries about it.
Okay.
I think most people understand that. How do I put this tag? I don't know how to put this tactfully. Like, free soloing is not for them, right? Like I think that's crazy, and I never want to do that. Okay, that's fine. That's a good thing to know, but that doesn't mean that just because you think it's crazy and you never want to do it, that person who is doing it necessarily must be crazy.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on that? Because this has gotten a lot of attention, a lot of global, a lot of international. I mean, it has been on every news source. The news that doesn't cover events like this.
My sister sent me a text the other day. Actually, was like, I don't want to be one of those people, but I just thought about this climb, and like nobody even died, and I thought it was really cool. And I'm sure you've heard about it, but I just wanted to share. And anyway, like, yeah.
I mean, it's showing up on.
People have heard about it.
You know,
like my mom has heard about
this. Entertainment programs. It's been on entertainment.
Yeah,
programs,
exactly.
You know?
Jared Leto gave a shout out during the middle of a 30 Seconds to Mars concert to his buddy, his bro, Alex Honnold. Yes.
Are they bros, really? That's
I think so, yeah.
Oh.
Because be Jared Leto bros. Climbs. Like, they've taken him climbing before, I think.
Okay, all right.
I think he's a bit of a climber, yeah. But so let's just say because of this.
Derek's laughing.
And this pops up, you know, I don't know. When was the last time that this came up? A climb of this significance. It's been some time.
This is super significant, for sure.
But because of that, you start scrolling through the threads, you know, the feeds, the comments. For the most part, people that have never climbed slash, you know, maybe some haven't been out of the house too much, you know, period. And so they see this as something that's not only insane and reckless and dangerous, but it shouldn't be celebrated. I mean, they took it that far.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on that?
Man. So, honestly, I think that writ large, just by definition, most people do not achieve mastery at a thing. Right? Like, to master something would mean that you are, like, you know, 3 Z scores out, like in the top 1%, like, you know, you're like way on the end of the bell curve, right? By definition, then, most people can't do that, or they don't do that, right? And so I think when I consider what Uli was doing, or what Killian did, or what Honnold has done, I think those are demonstrations of mastery. And that is not super accessible to most people because it requires a lot of discipline. There's a lot of hard work. It also requires a fair amount of luck just to be in the position where you're actually able to, like, have the free time to master something really well. And so it just becomes a sort of otherworldly thing. You're like, well, it's just so dangerous. And it seems like, you know, I think it denies the probability side of the equation, right? You know, risk is probability and consequence and exposure. So if the exposure climbing El Cap free solo is really high, like, it's very clear, like, if you screw up, you will fall and die. Some people say, well, what's the, you know, like, that's the consequence. Well, then how many times do you expose yourself to that? Well, ultimately, like, big, hard solos, Honnold hasn't done a whole bunch of them because probably he does it in a calculated way and would like to live. Most free soloists die free soloing at some point. Maybe not most, but there are plenty of notable ones who have.
John Picard.
What's that?
John Picard.
Yes, and then I mean, you got Reardon and, like, a whole slew of people, so then you just look at the probability side of the equation. What's the likelihood this person is actually going to fall off? Well, if you've really mastered technical granite rock climbing and you've mastered that route in particular, and you've spent every summer for the last decade or more climbing on El Cap and in the valley, maybe your probability is really, really low.
Yeah, but how nervous was Jimmy Chin filming the whole thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a couple, probably a few layers there, right? Like, you know, I don't want to watch my friend die. I don't want to watch anybody die. I don't necessarily want to get someone's death free soloing on footage.
I don't want to film them
die.
And then
also, like, and if that all does happen, I also can't make this movie anymore, probably. And that sucks because I put a lot of time and effort into it.
Wow, that's like the worst thing ever.
That's a photo that I saw, and I can't remember who posted that. Was that today or yesterday or something?
I don't know. I didn't see that.
Where it was the two of them hugging at the top. It was the two of them hugging at the top. And I think it was on Honnold's Facebook page or Insta or something where he was just like, Jimmy was really happy that I made it, you know, type of thing. And it was exactly what we just said where, you know, because it finished his movie. You know, if it had gone the other way, then,
well,
you know, he wouldn't have his movie.
Well, but I mean, and, like, there's a lot of...
Oh, my God.
There's so many layers there, right? Like,
here's me, and this tells you where my mind went. This gives you some insight into how I was thinking. I'm watching... Jimmy Chin's footage that they released. It's a very short clip.
Yeah, it's like 30 seconds.
Yep, super short.
The enduro
and I'm thinking, okay, if I'm Jimmy Chin, I have to think in advance. If he falls, what do I do with my camera? Do I let him fall out of frame at the bottom?
Or do you follow
Or do I follow it down? Right? Did you not think that?
Well, I'm sure they had multiple cameras, so you could probably get both.
I'm thinking in my head, I'm like...
I got to imagine there's a drone floating around too, actually.
I'm thinking I need both because I want one on him, but I want the main camera, like him falling, just maybe somebody needs to see it for scientific purposes. But I want the main camera on him to just stay there. If he falls out of frame, he falls out of frame because that's more theatrical, dramatically... Right.
This is a movie that would never get released. Though.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
It never would get released.
Falls out of frame. No, it would because
Homeboy
got eaten by a crocodile on that kayak movie, and all it showed was him in the kayak, and then the kayak flipped upside down. Dude is gone, and that made the film because we lost a pro kayaker in Africa or wherever from a croc or hippo. Something got him in the river, and nobody even knows. So, like, if he falls out of frame, he falls out of frame.
But how many times? This is a good question. We're going into a little bit of a morbid side.
We should probably just forward this to Alex. You know, I'm sure you've got his phone number from the interview, right?
No.
And just be like, hey, dude, you should hear this one. It's real good.
But
if you're Jimmy, is he thinking about these things?
No, sure, but this absolutely. Is a real question that I have for both of you guys, because
yeah.
I don't follow the death videos, I'll be honest. But
likewise.
That being said, there is so much activity that is recorded now, right? And so we're talking all of the, you know, that we have skydiving videos and we have base jumping videos. I mean, all of these ones. And for the most part, anyone that has been killed in action has probably been recorded, right?
Truth.
Across the board for what he did is just staggering to the best climbers in the world. And so people like myself, to me, it seemed almost sort of superhuman. You know, one of those events that puts him in a category where you can just kind of retire now.
It's super rad. Absolutely. Like, if he was like, cool, I'm good with free soloing for the rest of my career, that would be, like, I think no one would fault him for that. Everybody would be like, nice job, dude. You fully pushed the standard forward even more. Congratulations, you made the contribution we need you to make. Like, humanity and climbers are never all happy. So, like, again, like, when we talk about sort of, like, the thought process that all this sort of revolves around, like, it's not to say that this isn't, that it's just so simple and blasé and, like, it's not a super awesome achievement, you know? But I think there's a really interesting bit that he talks about in the first interview with Mark Sinha after he sent it. And Mark is like, you're going to go hangboarding this afternoon? He's like, yeah, I've been on this training program. I want to climb 9A. And so I've been hangboarding every other day. And today's the other day, so I got to go hangboard this afternoon. And Mark's like, you're not going to take the afternoon off? He's like, well, no, I just did, like, you know, 3,000 feet of good warm-up. Like, it's time to go get my workout on. And I think that's exactly the point, right? Is that if you're going to go do the free solo and not fall and die, you need to get it to the point where it feels almost casual. And that means looking ahead at the next objective and sort of attaining that next level of mastery and being dedicated and disciplined to doing that. I mean, that's kind of the approach I take to my climbing is, like, when I finally send the thing, whatever it is, well, man, it's nice when it feels casual. You know, like, whoa, like, I'm at the next level now. That one felt casual. Time to move on to the next thing, you know? And I think that just really sort of, I think, exemplifies the whole idea of Honnold's approach as I understand it based on what he said. Like, I mean, that's it right there, like. Yep, it's my other day, so I got to go hangboarding. It's been great chatting with you. See you in a couple hours, you know? Going back to the van.
I love that. I absolutely love that, yeah.
All right, again, Derek DeBruin of Bear House Mountain Guiding. Derek, what's on the agenda this summer? You have some classes?
We've got a trad climbing clinic coming up next weekend on the 17th. We've got a rescue clinic on July 22nd. We are running plastic to classic clinics with the front.
I love that name. Yeah, we were talking about that.
Yeah, it's just like the gym to crag thing. You want to, like, learn to climb outside for the first time. We've got one of those a month all summer. So we've got a lot of stuff on the Facebook page, on the website. Like, we're psyched to get people outside climbing.
Sweet, man. It's a hot time of year.
It is a hot time of year. We try to pick places that are shady or high elevation, preferably both.
Really? Any snakes on your climbs?
Not lately, no.
Good.
Yeah, in the past, but not this season.
No, I hate snakes. Why did it have to be snakes, right? That's the famous line.
Nicely done. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's a great line. Yeah.
Anything else you want to mention, Derek, before we move on here in the show?
But I'm giving a TED Talk next week. Y'all should come
out.
It's here in Ogden.
What is this you speak of?
Okay, this is something we're familiar with, but I don't know if we've mentioned it once on the show. So what's this involved?
You're going to be in the same category as Caldwell.
Well, I don't know that I would
ever
go that far.
And what are the regional TED Talks? I mean, how are they different than the other ones? And what's your involvement?
Oh, gotcha. So there's a global TED Talk every year that, like, you know, like, hey, we're going to invite, like, people that we think are super rad at whatever it is they do. And they're going to come talk to you for a few days, you know, like 18 minutes a pop. And you're going to learn a bunch of stuff and they'll present some big ideas. And then at the end of it all, we'll give $1 million to one person's sort of cause and they'll use that to fund whatever it is that they're doing. Whether that's, like, helping... you know, certain type of research or humanitarian work or, like, space exploration, whatever it is, right? And so the regional programs are like TEDx.
So what are you going to do with your million if you...
I'll
let you finish.
There's not a million up for grabs, so it's okay. I'm not really worried about it. Though I have thought about that. It's like, you know, what would you do if you won the lottery, right? Like, you got to figure that out. So this program
I'd soup up my new 1980 whatever RV.
Nice.
So...
That'd be really
good. Put new tires on that thing like nobody's business. Yeah.
Nice. Maybe we can start a GoFundMe or something for you. We'll get you some tires. But anyway, so yeah, the TEDx here in Ogden is just a regional Ogden TED event. So it'll run just like a normal TED conference, just a little shorter duration. And there's speakers from all over the place coming in for it. And then when we're done, they'll all be posted online with the rest of the TED Talks. And if you like them, you can go listen to them and download them on the podcast, watch them on YouTube, whatever.
I'm stoked. Are you ready?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. Like, I've been practicing a lot. Going to talk about risk and climbing and stuff.
No notes. That's brutal, dude. That's legit right there.
Not for you, though, dude. You just talk. I mean, honestly, that's what I love about you. That's what I love about you being on the show. Our climbing segment, what is that normally? We keep that to about 20 minutes. That was a
15,
lot 15,
yeah. Yeah, it was like, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, and you talk, and I love
that. My
bad, it,
yeah. I didn't mean to blow the segment.
No, just meaning you're not going to have any trouble on your talk at all.
No, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm not super nervous, but I am psyched to just expose more people to climbing and the risk assessment that goes into it, which I think is part of the reason we had the conversation we did today. Because you see this response of like, that's crazy, what you're doing is so dangerous. I'm like, you know, going sport climbing like is really less dangerous than driving your car for a week. And I'd love people to maybe understand that a little bit, that there's a lot to be gained and it's maybe not so insane.
What's it take to see it live in person?
To see it live in person, I don't know that you can anymore. I think they're actually sold out.
Is it sold
out? However, you can hang out in the right outside the doors, and they'll be like broadcasting everything on the screens there too, so you can see it live, not in person.
Oh, that's cool though.
Or like all the they'll have the drinks and hors d'oeuvres and whatever out there, so it might actually be the better way to see it, if I'm being honest. And then afterwards, at some point, all the videos get thrown up on YouTube and on the TED website and stuff.
Parking lot crew at the TEDx.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that'd be perfect.
Tan van tailgate. Well, congratulations being selected for that. Or how's that work? Is it a selection process?
Yeah, you had to apply,
put your name out?
There is a selection process. You can put your name out. It was kind of a friend of a friend thing. Like, so one of the people who's organizing is friends with my wife Susan from Gear 30, or like she used to come to Gear 30 anyway. And so then she was like, "Oh, we need speakers for TED. Anyone interested?" And I was like, "All right, sure." But then she's like, "Oh, we'd love to have you. Like, let's come talk." And then then there's like this big pool of people that they sort of gather, and then they start culling the crowds, and then somewhere along the way, after like 7 interviews, they're like, "Okay, you're good."
Have you seen the lineup? Anybody you looking forward to talk or to hearing talk, or do you even know who's?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cool. Let's see. So basically the guy responsible for the existence of Batman is going to be there.
Okay, that's cool.
I'm
so bad. I should look at the list. At some point, I saw the list. I just can't remember.
Yeah, well, and he's got a really interesting story because, like, he didn't create Batman, but he basically saved Batman from sort of like the '60s TV show, like just sort of taking this slow downward spiral from there and making it kind of the sort of cool, gritty thing you see today.
Plus, I think in Todd Love's Snapchat, I feel like I want to say the person who has like the most followers ever on Snapchat organically is supposed
yes,
to give
there's,
us
there's
talk,
another,
right?
There's yeah. one of those.
Which is what a random accomplishment.
I know.
Why don't you tell me about that one?
I have
no idea
you
who
should
he
go,
is.
Yeah, you should go see that one. Anyway, so... Yeah, it's actually a pretty good lineup. I'm pretty psyched to see what people have to say. Though, if I'm being totally honest, I might just space out and not watch them at all until it's my turn to go. Just so I don't like...
Because you're in the zone.
Yeah, I want to be in the zone. I want to jump it up.
I hear that. Well, we can all hear it later.
Exactly. Know, that's the beauty of it. So, like, we'll see.
All right, let's jump into On the Docket. Derek, you ever been to the GoPro Mountain Games or wanted to go?
I have not been, but I'm sure they'd be rad to go to. Are you going? Have you been?
Kick off today.
No way.
Yeah, right now through the 11th. Not going.
Okay.
Not going. GoPro Mountain Games.
Not this year.
Just telling everyone they are going on. So if you'd love to go to the GoPro Mountain Games, now's the time. Get your A out there tonight. Ogden Twilight with OK Go. That's a band who I kind of like their music. Love their videos.
Is that tonight?
Love their videos.
Is today Thursday?
Yeah, Thursday. We do our podcast on Thursdays.
Oh.
So like, we have for like 4 years.
It is a busy
The Salt Lake Climbers Alliance has a party tonight too, actually.
BD or?
Yeah, BD.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, you should buy a ticket anyway.
Okay, and it goes to...
It goes to protect your climbing access in the Wasatch. Like, they do rebolting and trail work, and it's the reason that you can climb on the LDS Church property now. Like, they've been doing lots of stuff.
Very nice. Yeah. WSU Outdoor Program Weekly Climb Night at 9th Street, 5 to 8 p.m. That is free, I believe. Just show up.
Yep, right? Free. Yep. Just show up.
June 10th is the Snow Basin Summer Opening Day. Also, June 10th is the Ogden Arts Festival, emceed by who? the Banyan Collective, and Lavender Vinyl. So come on out to that. It's the Ogden Arts Festival. Lots of arts and live events. From Plastic to Classic, from Bearhouse Mountain Guiding on June 10th. Is it sold out? Can you still get tickets?
That one's done, but there'll be another one in July.
Okay. That one's sold out. Never mind.
Did you coin that, or did you pick that up?
That actually was the front's name.
I like it.
Plastic to Classic. Yeah, right. Next one's in July. This one sold out. So it tells you people want to learn how to do this. Also that day is the Weaver Outdoor Program Summer Sup Adventures, Causey Reservoir. $30 for students, $45 for the day. They'll meet you up there, I guess, or rent you some stand-up paddle boards. I'm not really sure exactly how it works, but you can go for the day up there at Causey. Snow Basin Blues and Brews and Barbecue Kickoff. Kicks off June 11th. And that's also the second day for the Ogden Arts Festival, June 11th. Paddle, pedal, paddle at Jordanelle State Park is on June 10th. Super busy weekend this weekend.
For real.
On the 16th is the WSU Repeated Outdoor Program Weekly Climb Night at 9th Street. The 17th through the 25th, this would be rad to go to in Tahoe City, the Alpenglow Mountain Festival. Float the Ogden with Gear 30, and the WSU Outdoor Program is also on the 17th. I think that is Dad's Day on Sunday?
Father's
Day is on a Sunday, so this is Saturday right before. Take Dad down the Ogden on a float tube with Gear 30 and or WSU Outdoor Program. Weaver Outdoor Program is also leading a summit series. Lewis Peak is on the 17th. There's a meetup to do
Did you start that? The summit series back in the day?
Look, I don't know. I guess.
Is that what you're doing?
I did do a summit series. And you know what? I tried it on Sundays. I actually implemented it on Sunday, and we did our ride on Sundays.
Nice. Summit series Sundays?
Summit series. I did summer summit series. Yeah. And we started out, we did Malin's, and then you work your way up.
Brandon's church. Brandon's church service.
That's I'm just stoked they're still doing it.
Look at that legacy. That's rad, dude.
What? Float the Ogden. Okay, we talked about that. Wolf Creek Canyon Weed Whack. Get your weed whack on.
Anybody that's been talking about that.
Yeah. Come again?
Wolf Creek Canyon Weed Whack on June 17th. Just go whack some weeds up in Wolf Creek Canyon on the 17th. Or you'll be busy mountain guiding. Intro to trad.
Yeah.
That's you too, right?
Actually, I'll be teaching another clinic that day. Our esteemed guide Daniel Newman will be teaching that one. Right. I'll be teaching some multi pitch skills on the 17th.
June 22nd, the Sweet Remains outdoor summer concert at the Nature Center. Those are always fun concerts, by the way. That's June 22nd.
I heard a commercial from them. I think on KUER. I was listening to. I'm like,
really?
Ogden Nature Center.
Nice.
Yeah, I heard a podcast everybody likes had a thing at the Nature Center one time.
That's such a great
I like
place.
These random
Don't
drops.
Don't let anybody
yeah,
in.
Yeah,
yeah.
Camelback, I feel, is jumping on the back of Cotopaxi with their Pursuit series. However, their first one is in Salt Lake City. No, wait. They're selling it as Salt Lake City, but it's actually at Snow Basin.
Oh.
August 11th through the 13th. Their second one they do is in San Francisco. So it's a little
That's not Snow Basin at all, actually.
The second one is
it's not.
But the one that's in Salt Lake City, because it's Camel Pursuit Series SLC.
Right.
At Snow Basin.
Right. Well, I mean we all know that's Ogden, but I mean
Salt Lake City
Winter Ogden, Games are at Snow Basin too, so it kind of makes I'll let them have that one.
No. Apparently no? Ogden doesn't sell. You can't do Camelback Pursuit Series Ogden?
Well, I mean, you can if you like. Oh, and that's north of Salt Lake City. So, I mean, you could do that.
We got to work on that, right? Because you need the kind of recognition that, like small towns need to get, right? Like, where we're like, oh, yeah, Ogden, it's like the Jackson Hole or the Boulder or something. We really want to get to that point, right?
Right.
I feel it's getting there a little bit, little bits.
Little at a time. In the news. Did you check out the LCAP report and see the pictures of Honnold's free solo?
There's some pretty great ones, yes.
There's some pretty great ones, including the one where he woke up the peeps on a portal edge.
He tried not to.
Dude jumped out in a bunny suit. Awkward. And then Mountain Project was like, who is this dude? We want to interview them because that's weird. So, who's wearing your bunny suit on LCAP? In a portal edge,
Actually, I think they were just.
Or is that the thing to do?
I think they're on a part ledge. It's just on a ledge. I'm not gonna say it's a regular way to go, but I'm sure it happens once a season. I mean, the new descent of LCAP just happened yesterday.
Did not.
Or the day before, like just a couple days ago, yeah.
Did they not get the message from Cedar? Like, if you're going to do this stuff, you got to wait a couple weeks because you're not going to make the news. I didn't see it.
Right, but, well, and you are the authority on what makes the news or doesn't make the news, right?
And we also said they don't do it for the news.
Exactly.
When you're nude, you do.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, maybe you just do it for fun.
Or you're bros.
Maybe just
for fun.
Yeah.
Maybe they did it because they were 17 beers in.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm just saying, like, that's not so different from being in a bunny suit.
I don't know. Jack O'Neill was 94 years old. He was the ultimate surf pioneer. Here's five reasons from Grind TV. He invented, the wetsuit.
That's significant.
Also, he invented surf shops, surf companies, the surf leash, and, of course, the O'Neill Sea Odyssey. So one of the first true watermen in California, Jack O'Neill loved the ocean and knew it needed to be preserved and shared, which is why he founded the nonprofit, the O'Neill Sea Odyssey, in 1996 to provide free marine biology and habitat lessons for children from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. The core of the program is centered around a trip on Team O'Neill's 65-foot catamaran that teaches the children about marine biology, ecology, and navigation. So rest in peace, Jack O'Neill. You had a very fine life from 1923 to 2017. Also, in just off-the-wall weird-ass news, a cougar was found beheaded in Davis County, not too far from the Bonneville Shoreline Trail.
Okay, what's this story? Because I don't like it. I mean, I don't know much about the story yet.
Well, so. Wildlife officials said it appears the cougar was killed a day or weeks before it was found. Officer Crystal Tucker said they found a bullet lodged in one of the cougar's limbs, and the animal's head had been cut off. The area where the cougar was found is a popular hiking and biking trail. DWR officials said it's likely someone saw or heard something suspicious in the area. If you do have any information about this killing, it was an illegal killing, please contact the hotline 1-800-662-3337 or email turninapoacher@utah.gov.
Yeah,
I love it.
I'd get behind that hashtag.
Yeah, turn in a poacher. And they posted a picture of this on like Twitter here. It's disgusting. So look, if the cougars can be scary, let's not behead them. That's not good.
Agreed.
Also, good news though, on the flip side of that, from Cool, local brand clothing company from Utah, they have worked to save Utah alpine forest from becoming a golf course. Utah-based Cool has donated $25,000 to Save Our Canyons, a nonprofit we like and endorse. A chunk of land in Utah's central Wasatch was in danger of becoming developed. It's called Bonanza Flats. The 1,350-acre plot of high alpine forest near Park City is on the market. The site is home to aspen groves, three lakes, and pine forests. Salt Lake City-based Cool has donated $25,000 to the nonprofit Save Our Canyons in an effort to conserve the land. So there you go. You can help donate, too, if you'd like.
Good story. I like that one.
But most importantly, where the hell can you have a beer up and around Pine View and Causey these days?
Do you want to know?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want the skinny.
You can drink on the water in your boat.
As long as you're not driving.
Right. So basically, would you like the full... So here's what happened. I'm on the search and rescue team for the county, right? Which means I interact with the sheriff with some regularity.
Is Brandon Toll your boss?
He's not my boss, but he's in charge of the rescue squad. That's correct, yes.
Okay.
I guess he's my boss in that sense. Like, if he tells me that I should go to this place and save somebody's ass, like, I do that. So I guess that makes him my boss. But I'm a volunteer, so, you know, there's a looser relationship there. Anyway, so basically, the scene up at Causey and Pineview the last couple of years has had an increasingly large number of incidents throughout the summer, to the point where it's reducing capacity in the rest of the county because they have to operate in those places only to respond to calls. And the majority of the calls, if you actually go back and look through them, are alcohol-related incidents. And so the what has been happening is that the law enforcement just sort of has to hang out and wait and watch people get hammered until they do something stupid or belligerent. Like, oh, cool, I'm going to wait for you to go drown yourself or get in a fight or, like, light something on fire or leave your trash everywhere because they can't do anything about sort of on the front end. Now, it's not as big a deal for boating, because there's already state laws that regulate what you can and can't do with alcohol on a boat or on the marina. So they didn't need laws for that. So in this case, like there's I guess full recognition from the sheriff that, like, this isn't going to eliminate all drinking. People are just going to have to be discreet about it now, and they probably will be. And it will probably curb some of the drinking. And the idea is that hopefully that will reduce some of the incidences.
Did you just endorse koozies?
I can't confirm or deny anything you're talking about. I don't know what a koozie is. I certainly would never suggest that anyone should drink discreetly alcohol up at the Pine View or
Quasi.
Just to clarify. But that was the justification. It was actually based on like looking at the number of incidents over the summer, especially on the holiday weekends from the last 5 or 6 years. And
okay.
And the other one actually is that most of the litter, like a large portion of it, is alcohol containers.
I don't believe you. So I watched the live debate, I guess, the where they put forward the evidence. It was Brandon Toll and Holland Wilbanks, I believe, with Weber County, who they put it in front of the three Weber County commissioners. And Brandon Toll said, yes, we took photos, and it was, and he even gave it a random percentage. It was like 86% was alcohol related. Well, bullshit, because who's taking the photos? How are they? You can go up there and take a photo of all the beer if you want. Like, whatever. Your explanation right before this of how the resources were allocated was a way better reason than what they brought forward. Like, that makes sense to me. I will buy into that.
They didn't present that to the commissioners?
No. This trash reason is bullshit, because I will go up there and find more non-alcohol related trash than alcohol related trash.
Less babies, because there's a lot of diapers.
A lot of diapers, a lot of bottles, a lot of stuff. You know what I'm saying?
It's also related to actually a Forest Service initiative, which is to remove all the trash receptacles. And that's actually based on a national program where like the Federal Forest Service did some studies and basically like, look, if we move to pack it in, pack it out, in the long run, we ultimately have less trash left around. But in the short run, like if you start to remove those receptacles, you get tons of trash left all over the place because people expect them to be there. And then once they figure out that they're not there, it tends to reduce the amount of trash we actually end up having. That's based on like the federal studies. Whether that applies and works at Ogden,
I just didn't buy the whole trash thing. I'm all no, but the incidents and the rate of the volume of it taking up time on Memorial Day weekend last year
on the Saturday or something, there were 16 separate incidents, and I think like 14 were alcohol related. It's like, that's a lot for not a whole lot of daylight. You know what I mean? Like, basically, like, you settle this one incident, it takes you that hour, and you move on to the next one, and then all of a sudden you've worked your 16-hour day. So to me, that was, like, I'm okay having a beer. I appreciate that privilege, and this is kind of a bummer, but I can also see the justification. And I will say, there is this out. Ready? I'm going to, just you two and all the podcast listeners. Ready? All right.
What's the out?
So, if you are standing in the water, you can drink.
On my paddleboard.
No, just in the water, period. It's only around the water that you can't drink. So if you get in the water at the marina and just walk along the beach, as long as you don't litter that thing, and you're in the water, you're fine. So what you need, there's clearly a cottage industry opportunity here. You just need to get a paddleboard or a boat or something with a cooler on it and just hang out just offshore, sell everyone their alcohol, and then, you know, just collect the empties.
I'm going to stand.
Well, it's like riverboat casinos in the Midwest.
Right?
Yeah, not so different, actually.
because it's dry land, these boats have never been out on the water ever. But as long as there's that strip of water, you know, between the shore and the boat.
Correct.
I got you.
Good call, Todd. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the...
I cannot wait to go up there. I'm going to put my life jacket on, just in case.
That's smart.
Stand, like, knee-high in water and drink me a Coors Light.
That's technically legal.
And here's another point, too, on this.
Until you leave the water with your empty.
Is that
what if it's in a trash bag?
Then I guess you'd be okay. They'd have no way of knowing unless they saw you put it in that trash bag.
Sure, okay.
So, yeah, just watch the timing. Or
discreet.
Or if you get out at the marina where you can launch the boat. Like, if you go to the boat ramp, then that's fine, too. So just make sure you walk over the boat ramp and then get out.
Okay.
It's holding people accountable for ruining it for everybody else, right? And so I think over the period of just history and time itself, I think if people held other people just a little bit more accountable, even just a friendliest manner ever, I have a way of talking to people in a non-threatening way that also puts my point across. And so meaning, as far as those incidents you're talking about, if those incidents had been avoided, then this would not have been an issue.
Correct. So,
right? And it's the small group of people ruining it for everybody else.
The punchline, I think, is that more people should be like Todd at the top.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good way to do it,
All right, well, if you are going to drink a beer, it should be one of these six beers that pays homage or homage to the national parks. So number one being on this Grind TV list, the Rogue Pendleton Pale Ale. Last year, Rogue Ales and Pendleton Woolen Mills teamed up to honor Crater Lake National Parks with a specialty can. This year, they're at it again with the Rogue Pendleton Pale Ale in four commemorative cans for our national parks.
Now, because it was tied in with Pendleton, it was $59 a beer, but worth every penny. And it's like an heirloom, like so you can hand this beer bottle down generation to generation.
I wish beer didn't go bad. Just keep it bottled. But no, they do go bad with age. Number two, out of Utah, Uinta Golden Ale. Earlier this year, Uinta Brewing out of Salt Lake City announced they'd be doing a rotating park series can for their Golden Ale, commemorating eight national parks. They teamed up with Anderson Designs for some iconic looking cans. They are sharp, and they're definitely some of the most get out there inspiring beer cans around. Followed by Big Bend Brewing. It's the Big Bend Hefeweizen, named after the Texas National Park it's situated just outside of, made to quench any thirst dry Texas heat can throw at it. The Big Bend Hefeweizen is a tribute to its namesake in more ways than one. Followed by number four, the Teton Range IPA from Grand Teton Brewing, another brew company named after a nearby national park. Grand Teton Brewing, who is definitely competing with Melvin at this point in the same geographic area there, is one big tribute to Grand Teton National Park, and no beer represents their mindset better than the Teton Range IPA. If you're not a fan of the hoppy IPA trend, then give another one of their tribute beers a taste, the Old Faithful Ale. Number five is the Half Dome.
Or you can just kind of grow up and drink a real beer.
Oh, snap. Wow.
Sorry, go on.
Throwing out a real old Half Dome California Wheat. Who makes this? Oh, Tioga Sequoia Brewing Company. Anything from Tioga Sequoia?
I don't know if I know that name.
Their beer lineup is named after iconic features within national parks. So you've got the General Sherman IPA, Firefall Red Ale, and Mount Whitney Extra Pale. But their Half Dome California Wheat is a splendid tribute. And then finally, the Hitchcock Spring Kolsch.
You got it.
Superior.
It doesn't have to be that awkward. It's just Kolsch.
It's just a word, man.
I felt like I was swallowing my tongue trying to say that word. Do I need more beer before I pronounce it?
You use words so well. That one was fun to watch you say.
Superior Bathhouse Brewery. Any intel on Superior Bathhouse Brewery?
I don't know, but I like bathhouses. I like the national parks.
That's for another podcast, folks. The idea of honoring national parks with its beers to a whole different level. Superior is the first and only brewery located within a national park, housed in Old Bathhouse, inside of Hot Springs National Park in Arkansas. Superior even uses thermal hot spring waters to brew their beers.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
The Hitchcock
Spring Kolsch
is the first beer they've ever brewed, and we can't think of a finer testament to brewing within a national park. Those are your six beers that pay homage to the national parks.
That's a good story.
All of these news stories are listed up at the podcast website at thebandycollective.com under Ogden Outdoor Adventures, so you can click and find out all of this stuff. Worth watching. We won't play it for you because internet
we know what's
sucks. But this is the highlights.
Let's try it though. You know, I mean, what are the chances of it not working?
100%.
Go, right,
100% right now.
I'd say it's really high.
The North Face Rock Trip Chile in 2017, including who else but Alex Honnold, Cedar Wright, Emily Harrington, Alex Megos, and Felipe Camargo, is that how you say it? Mauricio Huerta. They all traveled to Valle de los Condoros, Chile, to explore the local rock with the Chilean climbers.
English word that trouble you, isn't it?
I want to say the names of the Chilean climbers, if you will.
Memento.
Chilean climbers.
My favorite is Peaks. He's so good at Peaks. Oh, I love it.
Facundo Langben, so
Longben,
and his sister or brother Soho, Lucas Gaona. Okay, that wasn't bad.
No, it's
wasn't bad.
Where'd they go again?
They went to
Valle de los Condores.
Is that better?
Isn't that bad?
I just need someone to pronounce it one time for me. So thank you, Derek. I appreciate that. Definitely worth watching. It's 8 minutes and 40 seconds worth of fun and climbing that is definitely worth watching. worth reading. If you have not read it yet, go to National Geographic's Adventure, the recap of Alex Honnold's rope-free ascent that sort of made news and that everyone's talking about. Quote of the week. How did it get so late, so soon? It's night before it's afternoon. December is here before it's June. My goodness, how the time has flown. How did it get so late, so soon? All right, who is it? Who is it?
It's like a Dr. Seuss
thing. It's exactly Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss. Thank you to Goal Zero for powering today's 275th episode of the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. Todd.
Okay, so just a few little... Oh, I'm sorry, Derek.
No, you're good. You go for it. I was going to make fun of the quote again.
You can always do that. That's fine.
Actually, no, I'm just going to send you a list of them. And then you can sprinkle some of those in occasionally, too.
So no Dr. Seuss?
No, Dr. Seuss is fine. It just always amuses me. I'm like, I never know where it's... I feel like it would be like, you know, something outdoorsy or adventure-y or whatever, but it's always just like, just this quote.
It makes you feel good for the most part.
Yeah. Okay, well, next time you go, we should use Dune.
If you want to...
I got a quote from Dune.
Okay, no, yeah, because if you go to any Instagram account in the United States that has anything to do with the outdoors, you can find quotes.
Sure.
Overused, many of them.
Right. No, and so you've got different
so
ones.
I'm finding...
So, yeah, I feel that. Okay. I'll kick some your direction. You let me know what you think. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Todd. What were you going to say?
Okay, so one of the things that I do, my new full-time gig, is outreach manager for Weber State University, particularly the Department of Visual Art and Design. I think a few of you might know that. So one of my, definitely my biggest outreach program is Arts in the Parks. And Arts in the Parks is a program, takes place at 6 different Ogden City parks. We're at Lauren Farr Park this week. All you have to do is look up Ogden Arts in the Parks. We have a website that's dedicated to when and where and everything. So it runs Monday through Friday from noon to 1 o'clock. Like I said, this week we're just finishing up and we have 5 more weeks after this. It is a series of arts and crafts and musicians and, you know, that type of thing. Every single day it's a different theme. And so come check that out. Really good turnout already, but we could always use volunteers. And so if you're interested, show up around 11:30 one of these days. What else do you need to know about that?
Your shirt's nice.
Thank you. You could tell I just came from there.
From Arts
to here.
In the Parks, yeah.
This
yeah,
will I mean, be what I'll be doing for the next
the
5 weeks.
The listeners can't see it, but it's a wonderful shade of blue. It's got, you know, the script word arts in sort of a purpley color, and then it's in the parks in green.
I don't think this logo has changed in 7 years.
It's pretty great.
But this is one of the programs that I inherited.
Parks is capitalized.
I'm quite impressed with. So this is a RAMP-funded project, so thank you so much to RAMP on that one.
It's all the little
things.
And
thank you to Weber State, and thank you to, to me. I put in a lot of... damn work
you
on
know
this
what?
Program.
Let's back up a step. We should thank RAMP, and we should thank Weber State, and we should also thank Todd to the Top.
Todd to the Top. Thank you, Todd to the Top, for your help in arts in Ogden.
But I'm proud the way it's going. And then one other quick little thing. On Saturday, you mentioned the Ogden City Arts Festival is coming up, right? So we'll be there as band sessions, and then I'll also be there on Saturday from noon to 4 doing a printmaking project through Arts in the Parks. It's kind of a nice little thing I'm doing for Amir, and so I'll be bouncing back and forth between the two. I did line up The Proper Way is going to be playing on Saturday. They are probably, well, for me, probably hands down my favorite local.
Yeah, and I have a question for you. When it comes to toilet paper rolls installation, which way is the proper way?
It's over the top. I mean, there's not even a question. It's
over the top.
Over the top.
Is the over the top is hashtag
unless,
the proper way.
Unless you,
the
yeah. proper unless way you have it. Small children.
Who just, and then you have to,
and then you should do
care.
It under the other way, because then they're less likely to pull that stuff out.
Yeah, or cats. Cats do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They
so
kind of do that.
Those are the exceptions.
More information about Bearhouse Mountain Guiding at bearhousemountainguiding.com and on Facebook and on Insta, right?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram.
You're Derek DeBruin.
But Bearhouse Mountain Guiding is not quite yet having Instagram. Well, we're trying to be strategic about how we launch social media. We're a small business. We got like only so many people and time to like try and generate a good feed of stuff, and so we're. You know, we're working our way there.
Crushing it on the Facebook, though.
Plus, you're just fun. I mean, is Instagram going to stick around? You know, these are the questions that you're asking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Instagram's like, that's going to fade immediately, right? That's like...
you're always like, I just got the MySpace site set up, and look what happened.
Look for us on Facebook, Instagram, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TheBandingCollective.com.
Oh, also on Friendster, right?
And by the way, we are on Twitter at Ogden Adventure. Or at Banyan Podcast. Todd to the Top is working on our MySpace account right now. Let's hit a little outdoor jukebox. Strangers You Know by Sparrow Hand, brought to us by, I guess, Go Zero. So thank you so much, everyone, for sticking around with us. As John Muir would say, the mountains are calling, so let's go drive a tan van there.
Past the window you look, then you move. If you knew, no one could keep still. I'm here if you care to dance. The wind is